episode 5 of the Decoded podcast with Roland Chidiac and Chris Clough. I've been wanting to do that all week.
You know what's funny? I was thinking about it, listening how like we have no bumpers at all, eh?
None. There's nothing. Old school, we just turn on the mic and go.
That's it. Just get, like, what is it? Less walk, more talk.
You know, it's funny too. I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the bumpers and stuff. And as you can tell, I obviously haven't taken any time to work on that. So I guess authentic vibe. Like, just let's do it. Let's just talk. Cause that's what we want, right?
It's true. The straight feed. Just get to the feed.
So anyway, here, and if you want bumpers, man, go nuts and make them.
No, it's okay. I mean, part of it, you know what? It's fun in the crafting of it. Like, to start, you know, for me, you know, if you start considering you, okay, so it's that, okay, I can do this a completely different way. One of the things that was back in my former life as a chef, I would be in conversations with other young cooks. And, you know, go back to the previous episode, that whole breakdown about difference between cook and chef, if anyone wants to argue that one all over again. But, you know, conversations with other cooks that they talk about, we used to talk about the kind of the arc of professionalism, and you sort of start your career with very little experience and you get so hungry that you're just trying everything and you turn into this hot mess of zipping in every direction, but telling yourself you're building your craft. And then you kind of come around that arc and you start to realize that it's time to simplify and focus on something that really works for you. And when you do that, you almost become entirely comfortable with that label of being a cook, because at the heart, that's the skill set. That's the lived experience that you're honing. And just if someone decides to call you a chef, well, that's a compliment in sort of like to the common tongue. But on the inside, when you start to let go, when you can intentionally walk away from the complexity, because what you're doing, you really understand from the inside out, you're comfortable with simplicity because you know that's what reads. And so, you know, I think about my journey with doing a podcast, and you talked about the grind before and just having to do the post-production and, you know, making the contacts and the time spent plotting and planning. That's a little bit like that startup mode. It's a little bit like that, you know, these are the things that I've come to accept that I have to do in order to put out this thing. What I've really come to appreciate about what you and I are doing here is that I think we've swung around to that simplicity. So get into the conversation without, you know, worrying about, I need this sort of promo or entry song or, you know, that backbeat kind of playing during our conversation. We could go there. But I feel more at ease just kind of getting to the chat.
I'm with you. You explained that perfectly. I really like the way you put that. You're right. We've both gone and done the bumpers. I mean, you still continue doing them. We've got the music thing down pat, post-production. I see this project as just like, let's just get it on. Let's start talking. Let's make it happen. And yeah, I feel like I've accomplished certain things in the realm of podcasting. And now it's like, I mean, yeah, I could take some time and we could build stuff like that, but I'm just not interested at the moment. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, some people or you or I might think it's a good thing or a bad thing, but at the moment, it's just not working for me. It's not fitting. And I just feel like there's a lot of that going on with me right now. Like, last night I wrote a blog post. I banged out a blog post about this amazing collaboration that Peter Cameron and I, our classes, are doing right now. I tagged you in it this morning because after I put it together last night, I posted it, and then I laid down in bed and I started like preparing to go to sleep, and I had my iPad and I opened it up and I went to the post, couldn't see any of the photos. All the photos were blank. And I literally shook my head, deleted the tweet, and then moved on. I'm like, I don't have time for this. The time I gave it was the time I had for it. And so I just put it down and I thought, I'll think about it today. Wake up this morning and have a message from Peter Cameron that says he loved the blog post, couldn't see any of the pictures. So I just responded and said, you know what, dude, Obviously, there's an issue there with the photos. I'm going to have to work on that. And then before I connected with you this today, I went ahead and fixed everything. And it was a bit of a gong show. And it took, you know, 30 minutes of my life that I'm never going to get back. And it's all good in the grand scheme of things, because now I've got this post that I can share with people and talk about collaboration, talk about bringing the walls down in your classroom and connecting with people and really making learning fun and something for the kids to look forward to. But I wasn't going to give it any more time. And the only reason I did is because there are other people involved. If it was just my reflections and it wasn't connected to anybody, then I simply would have just left it. And I do have some blog posts like that. And now I know why they're like that, because I finally took the time to figure out the problem. But wow, I was just not impressed with that. Anyway, so it's that whole simplicity thing, right? And then you'll like this. I was thinking, I didn't even want to blog it. I wanted to do just a quick like 5-minute podcast of me just talking audio. But then people aren't appreciating right now the whole podcast movement. So I feel like the people that surround me, they're just not getting it. And that's okay. But for me to share my learning and for me to share ideas that might get them interested, that might motivate them at the moment to try something different, podcast isn't going to do it for them. So I actually took a step back, decided not to be selfish and to create something that people could see, that people could read rather than just listen to. But I have to tell you, my go-to was not to type it out and attach photos. Like, I didn't want to do that, but I did it because I'm hoping somewhere down the road it's going to help somebody else. So thank you for the talk about simplicity, which got me onto that whole blog post thing and how I wanted to keep it simple, and it turned into something more than that.
It's I liked that phrase. It totally captured my brain. You said the time I gave it was the time I had for it. And it's like I moved on. And it's like, I think of moments. I've been talking this week a lot about source code with my colleague, just in reference to looking for some of the truths in teaching. And, you know, we could get really, well, I'll say for myself, I could get really philosophical and, you know, go down that path that teaching is like life, teaching is like parenting, all some of the stuff that you and I have touched on so far. And there were a couple moments this past week where I turned to my colleague and I said, you know what, we need to pause here just for a second, because that's some of the source code. Like, I think we just touched on something that feels more true than before. And that quote you just said about the time I gave it was the time I had for it. So I moved on. On one hand, you're recognizing what a valuable commodity time is. But you're also in the same moment saying that there's a limited resource. It's a valuable resource. And there's always a next thing that's looking to steal some of it from you. And you can get caught in that loop really easily and say to yourself, well, I don't have enough time to get everything done that I need to. But I think you could also flip that and say, the time that I have right now, I'm going to do something with it. I'm going to go on to that next. Like, if you really are just clipping along and going from like checkbox to checkbox. So I'm going to take this slightly out of the wellness factor and say, let's say you're having to sort of satisfy a whole lot of stuff, external requests. You know, you're not necessarily being mindful. You just got to get the work done. So I think if you flip it, and you start to scrutinize the, how much time do I actually have in a day? And am I using it effectively? I would guess that one of the time suckers in that frame really is like giving extra time to stuff that you shouldn't. You take just a fraction of that energy and say, I'm going to look forward and wait for my moment to swing back around. Or I'm going to wait for some cue externally that somebody else needs something from me. So you're a little bit more in harmony with your community. So, you know, you mentioning that sort of the next day, you're like, you get the note that kind of gives you that little heads up display reminder. Yeah, you know what? Love the post, but, you know, I didn't see the pictures. And then you decide, okay, you know what? I got 10, 15 minutes. I got it right now while I'm having my coffee, have my breakfast. I got the tech that can accelerate it. you know, everyone's all good. And you get that done. And I love that. The time I gave was the time I had for it. So I moved on. And the funny thing is, it doesn't mean that you don't go back. It just means you recognize you got to get to the next thing. Thank you. That was cool. I like that.
You're welcome. And like I said, it was, I didn't want to give it any more time, and I wouldn't give it any more time if other people weren't involved. So because Peter has been so amazing in his collaboration with me and my students, I feel like it's the right thing to do to give it to him. Like you and I, before we started today, our podcast, I had some technical issues on my end. And, you know, if it weren't for you and your perspective, we'd just be rolling right now with no video. But you know what? I know that after talking to you about it, I felt like it's important that we try to keep our flow. And so we made it happen. And I don't know what people see right now. I may look very pixelated, but I'm enjoying that. I'm learning how to be comfortable with the pixelation. I'm finding like if it's just for me, which apparently most of the time it isn't, then I'm just moving on. I'm giving it what I need to give it and I'm gone, because there are so many, like you said, time is so valuable. And as I get older, I'm realizing that time is the number one commodity for me, like, and for most people. And as a teacher, wow, the time we have in the room with the kids, or the time preparation time, it's like, it's holy. I literally go, and I'm not going to say where I hide in the school because then my colleagues will find me, but there's a couple of places in the building where I go where I've not been discovered yet. And if they really need me, they'll find me, but I need to get away. Time for chit-chat is not happening at that time. I have work to do. It has to get done. And if I chat with people, which is part of the process, like you need to chat with people, you need to get to know people, you need to connect, but sometimes you don't. And like you said, when you evaluate the time that you have and how you're using it, you realize that there's a lot of it being wasted. There's a lot of it just floating out in the air. And sometimes that's good. Sometimes I use my time to blow it away because I need that. But this morning when I woke up, I wasn't going to give that blog post any more time. Mm-hmm. I had to do some things, recharge, so I could connect with you. And so it didn't go the way I planned, and that's fine. Things don't always go the way you plan, but talking time is like, it's major. And I'm done telling people I don't have time. I have time, and I'm going to choose what I'm going to do with that time. And sometimes I have to do things that I don't want to do, and sometimes I'm going to do what I need to do. And unfortunately, whatever gets dropped off the list gets dropped off the list. But I'm more like in tune with that whole, when people say they don't have time for something, it's just they do have the time. They just aren't going to give it to that. And so I would rather be a little bit more authentic in verbalizing that and kind of really connecting with the awareness that I'm not giving it my time, or I'm not giving it my time now. It may be later. You know what I mean?
I do. And I think, you know, this week you shared with me that podcast. I think it's probably a good moment to kind of throw down on that a little bit, because, you know, I'll jump into about my waste level in this, but the podcast, the Rich Roll podcast that you threw my way with David Goggins, there's just so much that he is, but, you know, athlete, soldier, speaker, beyond motivator, whatever that thing. It's funny because I think about the measurement, time as the metric as to whether or not we're well, you know, the wellness factor. I think we can kind of come back to a lot of the conversations where they get centered on time. They get centered on, you know, a great idea is brought to you and the person pitching it is hopeful and open, and the response is, I love it, but I don't have time. Or as Goggins has kind of put it in it, you know, you're sitting on the couch and you think to yourself, Oh, it's like an hour before bedtime. I don't have time to go for a run. Or you're, you know, moving through your space in your house and you look and there's like a clock, you look at a clock, it's 5 minutes before the time you would normally go out to get in your car to drive to work. And then you do nothing with the 5 minutes. It's a really crazy little measurement of like Bermuda Triangle, hyperspace, zero wins in there. And I've started to, and it's funny. I think my mindset, like you were saying, that podcast connected with me about how intentionally, when possible, how intentionally you can command some real fortune out of using your time. And, but it's going to take a little bit of discipline, and it's going to take, like he said, talking quite honestly about your mindset. Your mindset, yourself, how you're feeling, what you're doing, and totally find that sort of like that couch you're sitting on in your mind. It's not the one you're sitting on in your living room. It's the one you're sitting on in your mind.
Can I throw down a teacher example so that we can, I want to make this as concrete as I can for teachers with respect to time, if it's good with you.
Yeah, do it.
I really appreciate you talking about that podcast link I sent your way with Rich Roll, who's an endurance athlete, and David Goggins, who, like you said, I don't even know how to describe him, former Navy SEAL athlete, endurance runner. Like the things he's done physically are nuts. Same with Rich Roll. And maybe I'll link that up in the notes here and on the blog post if anybody's interested. There's a lot of swearing. So David Goggins, he loves to curse, which is his thing. So just be warned that if you're listening to that podcast or if you're watching it on YouTube, there's going to be a lot of swearing, something Chris and I don't do much of on this podcast. But anyway, I'm going to bring it right back to teaching. Then, Chris, I would love to hear about the things that are on your mind based on the week you had at work. Okay. As you know, teachers have a ton of things on their plate. In fact, I don't even call it a plate anymore. I call it a platter. We have platters and they're loaded with stuff. And I'm guilty of this too. We have so many things going on and we have such a limited amount of time that when a new initiative comes down the pipe or we go to a PD session and we're told, okay, you're going to start doing this now and we're going to teach you about what it is and how it works, and then you're going to go back and you're going to implement it, there's always going to be people who are like, yeah, let's do this, who are right in the moment. And whether they get to it or not is a whole other thing. But in that moment, they're like, yes, I'm in. Let's do this. Then you've got a handful of people that are like, I don't have time for this. And so if you bring what we're talking about to the classroom, it's the same thing. We have the time, but we're picking and choosing what we feel is necessary for the group in front of us and for where we feel our strengths are. So when I'm taught on how to do something with the kids around numeracy, of course I feel nervous the first time I hear about it because I'm like, I have no skills here, so I need to pick up some skills, and this is going to take time. And if it's going to take time initially because I need to become proficient at it, it's a new fluency that I need to figure out. Once I've invested the time, I know that I'll be able to run it in a smooth way and I can be more efficient with the time it takes to make it happen. But in the beginning of whatever it is you're starting, it's going to suck the time right out of you. You may feel scared. You may feel a little bit anxious about that. And then some people just don't do what it is that they're expecting us to do because we don't know how to squeeze it in without dropping something else off. And this is something I feel like we're decoding right now. There are so many things teachers have to do in a day, and we've got schedules that are jam-packed. And when you give us something new or when we try something new, something has to get pushed off. And that's why we talk about integration. That's why we talk about like sitting down and planning things out in a way that, you know, if you're going to do this, you can squeeze in all kinds of different areas of the curriculum so that you're maximizing your time with all the expectations that you're trying to get to in terms of the students' learning. And so it's the same thing. You have the time, but what are you going to spend it on? Where are you going to invest it? And I think something that a lot of people don't talk about, in my opinion, is they never talk about the time investment at the beginning. Like you and I said at the beginning of this podcast, when we were learning how to podcast and we were playing with bumpers and music and all the cool editing stuff, we gave it the time. And with this podcast that we're doing right now, primarily as, you know, when I work on the audio on this podcast, I find a song that I've got on the computer and I just plug it into the beginning, plug it into the end. There are no bumpers because you know what? I know how to do it. I'm just not doing it because I'm giving this some of the time and then I'm moving away and I'm moving on. And it's the same with teachers, and nobody ever tells you initially this is going to be a major time suck. So know that, and know that something else on your daily schedule is going to suffer for just, it's just going to suffer for a bit because you got to give this some time to pick up some skills. But then once you figure out how this fluency works and you've got a system going, then everything goes back to normal and you're just using your time efficiently. So I know teachers, every time, like I sit in PD, sometimes I run the PD and I look around and I know who's like, I'm not doing this. This is BS. And I'm like, that's cool. I'm here to provide some of my knowledge. If you want to be in on it, awesome. If you don't want it, awesome as well. I'm not here to sell you. I'm here to provide you with some information, some examples, and what it's done for my learning and my student learning. And then you can do what you want with it. So thank you for giving me the time to come and sit here, whether you feel it's a waste or not. You're here, and I appreciate that. But then go do what you want. I'm not here to sell. I'm here to provide, to share my learning, hoping it can help somebody else along the way. And that's kind of how I wanted to connect back to teachers and the time we have and how people want our time and how people tell us, you're doing this in your classroom. This is a strategy that's known to work and you're going to make it happen in your room. But nobody ever talks about what's going to get dropped off for a little bit while you figure out how to do this stuff. Nobody ever mentions that. And that, I think, is my pet peeve at the moment, because it's going to take time and something's got to go in order for you to suck up some more time to make this new thing happen.
I always like to push back on those conversations a little bit. For me, when life throws challenges, I like to ask, what's the evidence that this challenge is actually going to turn into the secondary challenge that you see coming down the road? Like, let's lay down the evidence and let's say that we need to separate the emotion from the evidence. Because when it comes to, I think, this topic of being hard pressed into a schedule that you just can't immediately envision, you know, I've got to get photocopying done. I got to get lesson planning done. I know my own children have to go off to some sporting event. I would really like to make it to yoga or, you know, run 5K tonight. You know, I want to sit with my significant other. So you set out your mental list. And I think it's really important that in that moment, it might not happen in the moment, but when you're reflecting on how you use your day, how you sort of create value in your day, is to really hold first the evidence that allows you to kind of escape your bias, and you don't get too swept up in the, it didn't work last time, so it's not going to work this time. And then you kind of go from that hurt into your automatic reaction of, no, I can't do that thing. I just don't have time. I don't have time. And you almost make it, you catastrophize it. And you don't actually have the evidence in that moment to suggest that the thing that's being offered to you is going to be any better or worse. So I think going into, you know, we talk to one of the, maybe the surprises for new teachers is that often we'll say, you're going to be really, really busy on the front end. And I think if we use our podcast, I think I knew that. You were very kind in sharing your perspective on it. And I connected with other people as well. You know, there's tons of resources out there. And they talk about, you know, trying to figure out the tech side and the combo side and the present side, rapport, all that kind of stuff in the beginning. And then there's that funny thing where initially one podcast takes you, for me, I was somewhere around 10 hours per podcast between the planning, the connecting, you know, doing my notes, then connecting with the person. And then you do, you know, there's an hour chat maybe, but that could be like an hour 45 when you have the combos on the round side of it. And then post-production. And I did that number and I looked at it on paper. I was like, wow, But I looked at the norm, I'm like, that's what's necessary right now. And so I was chipping away at that in the background. It was never 10 hours straight. I never sat there and did that. But, you know, and now I'm at a space that if I were to do do my other podcast, then, you know, I kind of have that locked down to about maybe, I'd say maybe 2.5, maybe 3 hours. So, you know, that's a great reduction. Now, in that, I can't honestly say that I'm doing anything effectively with those other 7 hours. And I think that's the sweet spot. I can sit down and I can do that calculus and say, it was taking me about 10 hours before. That's 10 hours out of my week or whatever that time frame from beginning to end. Holy man, it's amazing. I can sort of express my proficiency at this and say, I've knocked that down to 3 hours. But if I really go internal and get off my own mental couch, what the heck am I doing with those other 7 hours now? Because I was stealing from myself at some point. Should I not be able to say what the value would be of those 7 hours? And talking to new teachers, that thing happens. You know, let's look at the evidence. Let's separate the emotion out. So yes, you're stressed out. Yes, you're sad. Maybe you're sort of feeling some real high anxiety over the fact that you're constantly working. But if you separate the anxiety out, take the emotion out, and actually just look at that number, what would you like to get that number down to? And let's take the evidence of what it'll take, the skill building, the time, like, and then set yourself a plan there. You know, I'm kind of messing with my own mind right now. I really do wonder, you know, what do I do with those extra 7 hours? And I'm not saying you got to be cracking off 24 hours a day on stuff. But I know that number and I haven't done anything with it. And in this moment right now, it kind of bugs me.
Well, maybe it was just talking about it right now that's going to get you to change your mindset or your awareness about it. Because as you were talking, I wrote down here that it's also about an awareness of your doing. So when new teachers are told, or, you know, if a mentor says to them, listen, like, yeah, it right now you're working all the time. I get it. Once you find a flow, once you become proficient or efficient at doing a particular task or planning or whatever, you find someone you jive with and you work well with them together. Once you get that stuff under control, it changes. But you need to be aware. So you need to know that, you know, your number talks or your number strings in numeracy in elementary school, it's going to take you longer than it's supposed to for the first month, maybe, that you're doing them, or maybe longer, maybe shorter, but you need to be aware. And once you're aware, then you know that that time that's being invested, it's going to come back later, and it's not always going to be that. So when I talked about my podcast and the grind, it took a long time at first because I didn't know what I was doing. But then after, like you said, you have a system and you just know how much it takes. And then you use it and you work with it. I really love what you're saying about the other 7 hours. I can't wait to hear about your reflections on that and where you end up finding these 7 hours. Maybe you're spending some of that time sitting on your mental couch and not moving. Who knows? Maybe that's what you need. I know that when I have extra time, it just feels weird when it's just there and there's nothing happening during that, because there's always something. And I find as a parent, that time just like it gets filled in, like the holes, just the time gets dropped into the hole and you move on with that. But anyway, so yeah, I think I what I took from what you were saying is that there needs to be an awareness, because I think when there's no awareness, then you may start to spiral. You may start to feel, uh-oh, like I'm burning out, or you're just not even aware of what your body's doing to itself because you're spending all your time and energy on these new things you've never done before. I think when you become aware, at least you know what to expect. At least you have like a cushion, a mental cushion to lean on, so that your fall is not as hard as it could be without that cushion. So yeah, that's what I came up with.
I spent this last week, I had a couple conversations with students and colleagues, and I wish I could accredit to where I got this from, but kind of around the theme of not believing everything you think. And yeah, and just saying that, you know, that can kind of mess with your mind. But I think that I think that there's opportunity. Actually, I'm always hopeful. I'm always sort of thinking to myself on my daily basis, there's opportunity to improve. And that's just kind of like a general piece of my operating system. I think in a lot of ways, because it's fairly generalized, that I'm not doing enough work to really make that actual. It's one of those, you know, that bias of I'm okay. I'm kind of good at what I do, and I get up and I kind of eat well, and I sort of move. And you can feel that there's layers to that where complacency kind of sets in. And, you know, we talked a little bit about health and wellness before we hit record, and you start to realize, you know, on that curve, you talk about that professionalism curve, you get to that space where you're just like, you're not going to stand for it anymore. Like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be that. And then you become, okay, so how do I move from this space? And that mindset of just because you are having thoughts currently about your current state or condition or your challenges or your relationships, that you have an opportunity to challenge that thinking. And this past week was about that, you know, talking with some individuals about their career path and talking to some students about their life choices. And almost in talking about it, I sometimes get this, I get the sense that at times people talk about themselves not from inside out, but they talk about themselves like they're somebody they know. And I'll give you an example of what that could sound like. Yeah, you know what? I don't do that. I don't do that because I never do that. Or I don't really believe that because I've never really believed that. And it's a funny kind of cyclical type of thinking I've encountered once or twice and in a lot of different people. And I always like to pause there and say, you know, it sounds as if you're like you're talking about a buddy of yours that you're frustrated with and you can't get them to change or budge. I was like, can you bring that inside and sort of entertain the possibility that that is you, and you will kind of continue to have that mindset. When you choose to have that mindset, you're going to protect that mindset because you want to protect that mindset. It's not accidental. So this past week, I really found myself shaking up my own thinking. And it could be about what am I doing with that other 7 hours, or it could be just, you know, if everything is kind of good in my life right now, and it is, my life is good. My life is good. But like all adults, there's challenges, and like having all jobs, there's challenges, and I have a family, and I'm me, but I'm also a part of my family unit, and I'm a part of a staff, and I'm a part of these students' lives, and I'm a part of a system. So kind of playing with all those points, I started to think about where am I doing work that I can, where is the, how do I say this? It's not where I'm looking to affect change. It's where I'm starting to scrutinize my steps and saying, am I walking the talk that I'm selling? So if I am truly, you know, espousing to a kid that you can change your thinking, I step back and say, I have to be prepared to change my own. And that seems really simplified in that moment. But to take, and this seems to be the theme, take the time to step back and say, what is my thinking on that? Where did it come from? Where's the evidence that it's actually effective? And so there's been some challenges this week in talking with colleagues about their careers. You know, I've shared with you my path to sort of looking at self-regulation in order to help my children. So I've really had to strip off some of the layers of what, you know, what I've kind of assumed as my everything's all good, my operating system, and start plugging some new pieces in there. And like we're doing with this podcast, and like maybe we're suggesting to others, giving it a ride. Let's get the evidence that it might not be the right decision. And I'm not going to be bruised before I'm actually bruised. I'm going to give it a try and let's see what comes out of it.
Yeah. Hey, I appreciate you sharing all that. And, our conversations that we have back and forth all week that kind of lend themselves well to what we're doing on the podcast. Your awareness is helping me become more aware, and hopefully my awareness is doing the same with you. am I walking the talk that I'm selling? And the things you said around that make me think, and you mentioned the word operating system, and that got me thinking in a whole new way. Any operating system requires maintenance. And I think people forget that sometimes. I think people forget that, like, when you've got an operating system or some kind of system, sometimes it requires a reboot. Sometimes it requires a cleanup. Sometimes it requires a diagnostic. And so I think that that's a good thing, that you're shaking up your thinking. It's almost like you're going through your maintenance schedule. Your body feels like it's time, you're due, and you're rebooting, or you're diagnosing, or you're simply cleaning up. We do it with computers all the time. Why aren't we doing it with ourselves? And I think that, again, man, I can link this back with being aware, because when you don't do maintenance, you don't know what's going on in the system. You don't know what's working, what's not working, where the stress is, and then how you can kind of move that stress off of that that particular point and put it on another point where maybe that other point can handle more stress. Like, there's a lot of pieces here. And then you talked about the time too. And I just think that everything you're talking about goes with being human. And I think that when we get caught up in anything that we're doing, especially teaching, sometimes we ignore our needs. We ignore our well-being. And not on purpose, just because we feel like there's no time. We feel like we're not 100% aware, and we can't shake up our thinking at that moment in time because of what we're engaged in. It's all encompassing. So maintenance, that's what I get. That's what I got from that. And your whole operating system, the concept just gets me thinking about how important it is to refresh, to reboot. And people do that in all kinds of ways. But it's important, even when at the beginning, the front end, when you're investing major time in something, it's okay to step away, reboot, and come back, because it's not going anywhere. Like, you know that you have to invest the time, but it doesn't mean that you go full throttle 100% for an extended period of time, because then what's going to happen is you're going to lose out on something. The time you gave it, the energy you gave it, is going to be lost, and it can't be replaced to bring you back up as quickly as you need it to be. So thanks for that.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. I'll throw down a little kind of crazy. Maybe I'll be able to make this connect, but it maybe I'm going back to that, you know, where we started the cast, and you were talking about, you know, the time you gave, it was what you had for the activity, and you returned to it when you had time again. And part of the reason you returned to it was because you were being responsive to your community needs. And there are very specific times where that is the best indicator that you need to level up. Now, you got to decide, what are your trusted communities? So who is it that you're going to go to and talk to, and, you know, let them kind of, you know, hit you hard with the knowledge and say, yeah, you got to switch these things up. That podcast, back to Goggins, he said, you know, pain is one of the most remarkable teachers. And I also saw another quote of him. He said, you know, when you hit that spot of pain, you're only at about 40% of where you should be, of where you could still push through to. So, you know, what's the initial indicator that you're a little bit off track? And then where is the actual, you know, can you embrace that capacity that despite the fact you're getting a little bit of pushback from the system or the reminder for the system, it almost suggests to me that you still need to kind of hold the line a little bit just to see if the evidence actually supports the need. So if the system is saying, like, for instance, you had mentioned how the when you got the tweet mentioning, hey, by the way, you know, I wish I could have seen the pictures. There was an opportunity there to say, you know what, maybe I'll post them in another blog, but I'm not going to go back and rejig it. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but that's the moment of decision. Do you respond to your community and give away that moment, give away that productivity, or can you be at peace with the messiness? That was my first thing. The second thing that I was thinking about is that sometimes there's unforeseen impacts. Sometimes the community doesn't reach back. They just kind of respond. And I think reaching back for discussion is different than reaction. And just a really simple example of that, I often will flip my watch between two wrists. it's just, there's actually, there's a comfort level to it, is that I find with the rubber watch, sometimes I get a little bit of a rash there. It could be eczema or something. So I flip it to the other side, but I've gotten used to having my watch on different wrists. Like I don't have any real pattern to it, but I do flip it back and forth. The other day, my colleague noticed, which was kind of interesting. She goes, "Did you get a new watch?" And I was like, "No, I'm wearing it on my right wrist today." And then she said, "You know, do you do that often?" So she's backtracking through memory. I'm like, "Yeah, I do, but I never got to the backstory." She's like, "Oh," she's kind of accepted that there's things about me that she doesn't want the story, right? So I think that's what it is. So it just kind of left at that. And she walked away. Oh, there's just another thing that Clef does. But here's where that sort of reaction versus feedback comes in. The reason that I have the two watches that I have that I wear most consistently is that, one, they have a big display. I don't have a really great, you know, my eyes, I need to just be able to look quick. Two, they both have vibration alarms. So I don't use an alarm clock because I get up really early. So I understand that me getting up early and starting my day, like at 5 a.m. or 5:30, the rest of my family is not that person, but I am. So I need it. I would probably wake up very close to that time because I've been doing it forever. 2 weeks ago, it happened to be I was wearing my watch on my right hand. Now, my right hand is on the inside of the bed. And when my buzzer went off, it right away woke up my spouse. So her being a little lighter sleeper than me, her reaction is like, "What's that sound?" And she's awake. So it was unfamiliar to her only in so much as she had never heard it before. So she knows I have a vibration watch to wake up, but it doesn't impact her sleeping because that was my plan. But in this particular case, my attempt to switch up my routine, I needed that feedback. So it was something around that intentionality of sort of mixing things up a bit. The feedback I got from my community was basically, you know, keep the damn watch on your left hand, because that's on the outside. But it's interesting, right? Because, you know, when you're in trying to create those spaces to understand a little bit more about yourself and breaking down why you make decisions that you do, I think there's some value in being a little bit random, you know, taking a chance on that little bit of messiness and seeing what comes of it. In this case, I now make sure before I go to bed that my watch is on my left hand. But it doesn't change the fact that during the day when I get dressed now, I may slip it to the other wrist. So yeah, that was just the two observations I want to throw back on that.
The getting feedback from the community, which involves your spouse, is always it's always a good place to start with, and mm-hmm. it's always a good place to maybe put your selfish needs aside. I hear you on that. But when you're talking about when we need to consider our time, we need to consider our community feedback and what it's worth to us. Okay. So it's getting to the point for me where it's like, sometimes the decisions I'm going to make, are going to not go with the flow of the community. And, it's going to happen because certain things I feel need to happen in my life at a particular time. So I'm really appreciative of the reflection that kind of you're helping me engage in as we talk about the blog post this morning. The blog post this morning, it wasn't supposed to take more time. Like, but I've learned something. I learned about the way that I was embedding my pictures in my blog post. Now I know why what happened is happening, and it's happened before. So now I'm going to avoid that error, which is a really good thing. And if it wasn't for Peter and my perception of how much time he's given my students and how much time he's seriously put forth in terms of working with me and collaborating, giving me 100%, I just felt like, you know what? I owe it to the dude to give more time to this, to make it work. And some of my blog posts, there's nobody else involved. It's just me. And so it's like, well, this is what it's going to be. And the messiness, sometimes people don't like the messiness, even though they know it's necessary, because they're worried about what other people are going to think what other people are going to feel. Fortunately, I feel like I'm kind of moving past that. And I guess people who know me will know kind of like the flow that's happening right now. And it could change because people are ever changing. But sometimes messiness is not acceptable because of the perceptions, of the optics that they give off. And I get that too. But if that's where your mind is, then that's where you're investing your time. And that's important to you. And so honoring everybody's importance, honoring everybody's frame of mind and how they approach things is, it can be refreshing and it can also be frustrating. You're going to love this. Yesterday, I was listening to a podcast. It was Tim Ferriss, and I'm sorry, I don't know the guy interviewing him, but Tim said something that just clicked in my mind about what we're talking about, and now it's gone. So I had it there, and now it's gone. But basically, it was something around, oh, it's totally gone. I hate it when that happens, don't you? Oh, well. Tim Ferriss said something very important in a podcast I was listening to. And I was talking about messiness and how it's important to some people, not important to other people. It's gone. But it was a great point that I was going to make. I don't know. It'll come back to me some other time and you and I can discuss it. But I guess whoever's listening to the podcast isn't going to get the benefit of it.
Well, no, they will. You know, when it comes to you, as soon as we, you know, clip out of here, just throw it as a link into the actual blog post.
If I decide to give it the time.
That's it. That's it. So it's funny, you know, as we sort of get down to the final seconds of this cast, here's the challenge, you know, for this week, if I can throw one out. Figure out what your sort of watch switching moment could be. And that'll honor the messiness. That's a really, I think, a really simple way to look at your routine in a way that can be a little bit fun, could be, you know, it could be non-offensive, you know, except in my case where it woke somebody up. But like, what could be your watch switching routine where you just do a small thing and see how if the evidence matches up to your assumption of how it would turn out. So, you know, you're thinking about moving your watch to your right hand and you say, oh, it's going to be uncomfortable. No, it's not going to fit with my outfits or I'll forget I'm wearing a watch. See if the evidence bears that out. And then the second thing is a little bit more to your, you know, the challenge, the thing that you were saying about getting better at hanging the pictures, it comes back to, because that's that magic seven thing again. So you have time back now. Do you know how much time you just saved yourself? Intention. And then what will you use it for? Action. And if I take anything from the Goggins thing, and it's my last thank you I'll say to you, and Goggins, I'm sure you're going to listen to our podcast at some point, and Rich Rule, come on, man. He's like at episode 274 or something like that. You know, what I take from Goggins is that whole idea that you need to push into that space where you're forced to make decisions. If you don't put yourself in the space where you're forced to make decisions, then... you know, and you're compelled to make decisions because you've got stuff happening that you just don't know exactly what's going on. Like you have to make maybe minute to minute, maybe hour to hour. And as soon as you start to let go of that, that's where I think you're back on your mental couch again. So question you, what are you going to do with those 5-6 minutes? Not well, what are you going to do? And this week, I'm actually going to ask some people this week too about that wrist switching thing. When you switched up your routine, did it actually turn out? How did it turn out? Was it bad, good? What'd you observe?
I remembered what Tim Ferriss said, and I wrote it down, so I want to get to it. And then the cast is over. We're shutting down the cast.
Okay, we're out.
Number one, Tim Ferriss said something along the lines of, okay, and it goes to our messiness talk. If someone, okay, so I produce my blog post. It's missing pictures and stuff, okay? And then somebody hits me up and says, dude, I just read your post and like the pictures aren't there. You know, like what the hell's going on? If you take that personally, it's going to suck up a lot of your energy. You're going to be like, oh, this guy's shooting me down. Like he doesn't like my post. And you start to take all this information and your mindset is that you're being attacked personally. And Tim Ferriss said, people need to change their mindset. You need to look at it as, instead of this person's attacking me personally, you can look at it as, this person now might not have the time to come back to my post if and when I fix it. And so they're bothered, but they're not bothered at me. They're just bothered because on their end, they're inconvenienced that they've seen something that can offer them some kind of value, but it can't give them full value. And so it was just neat how he was talking about this mind switch. Like he was talking about, he'll email somebody and they won't get back to him. And the first thing his mind goes to is, oh, this person obviously doesn't want to connect with me. And when he took a step back and he thought about it, he's like, no, maybe my email got lost in an inbox full of emails. Maybe this person just doesn't know how to respond to what I've said to them or what I've asked them. And so his big thing was, you got to reframe. You got to reframe and not make it so personal to you. And when you do that, you will in fact save time because you're not going to waste your energy thinking about something that may not be true. And you're not going to be a mind reader. You're not going to waste your time and your energy mind reading. So I wanted to come to that just because I think it's important to reframe. And it goes with what Goggins said in that, in a couple of things I've heard him at and seen him at, like on YouTube and stuff, the what if question. And I know you do that all the time. And when I heard Goggins say, what if, I thought, hey, he got that from Clough. Basically, Goggins has been asked, how do you do these 24-hour marathons? How do you put yourself through the pain or the mental exertion it takes to do whatever it is you do? And his response consistently in the YouTube videos I've seen, in the interviews he's been part of, he said, I ask myself, what if I keep going? What's going to happen? Like, how is this going to benefit? Or what if I stop? What am I going to lose out on? And that's the big thing that I would like to leave with people for this until the next podcast and to leave with you. And I have to say, I heard the what if statement from you first, not from Goggins. But what if? So when you're doing something this week or whenever, and you feel like stopping or you feel like quitting, think about, well, what if I continue? What are the benefits of this? What could happen? And maybe I should see that by continuing through. And if you're doing something that really sucks, don't just think about what if you continue, what will it lead to? Think about, what if I quit? What might I be losing if I quit? And so that's kind of, I want people to consider that. I want people to think about that because people give up on stuff all the time. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that if you just throw the what if at you in your mind, it will help kind of reframe, maybe give you a little bit more awareness of what's happening and maybe why you want to quit something or why you want to continue something. And I think that's powerful for people to be able to do that. And so that's kind of where I'm going to leave this podcast right now.
Yep. I'll leave on the, just looking at the evidence, yo, like try to separate that emotion and ego from the actual evidence and deal. Whatever that evidence is, you deal. If you actually have messed something up, if you have broken something, if you've made something awesome, just be there in the moment and realize that even though it feels like there's a little bit of discomfort, you actually, that's your brain giving you the early warning to stop. It doesn't actually mean you have to stop. It's just that early warning and you can adjust that. You can eventually, I think, push yourself just a little bit further and further and further, right? That comfort zone. Dude, I love this talk. I totally love this talk. This was great.
Awesome. Yeah, me too. Thanks again for your time, Chris. And hopefully we will be able to carve out some more time in the coming days to do this again. So enjoy
with,
the rest
with intention,
of
the day. With intention.
That's right. And awareness.
All right, man. Take care. We'll talk soon.
See ya.